Okay. This note over here, Anusha, is it? Am I supposed to read this out, or are you here? Not here. Okay, so don't know. It just says here that evening drinks will be at 7 p.m. tonight, and the last session will be in here between 8 and 9:30 p.m. So I don't know if you know this already, but there you are. Now you know. Okay, so let us continue a little bit with meditation practice. And I'm going to talk a little bit now about how to develop some of the positive states of mind for meditation. And the idea is that so far, you may have, if you remember back, we talked about meditation yesterday and earlier today, the idea of bringing mindfulness up, giving priority to the spiritual path in the present moment. Also, this is part of letting go of the past and the future. But there's one more kind of ingredient that lacks in this process, and that is the aspect of enjoying it, having a sense of joy, having a sense of happiness, bringing out these positive emotions. And especially if you're watching the breath, the ideal way of watching the breath is to have that sense of joy with the breath. So you have a very positive feeling with it. And when you do, that is like the glue that glues you on to the meditation object. It's very hard. Once you have joy there, then it becomes very natural because you don't really want to be anywhere else. You want to be here because the happiness is actually so attractive in its own right. So how can we do this? There is a number of things you can do. The Buddha talks about this in the suttas in many different places. One of the ways, of course, is to develop the metta meditation, the loving-kindness or friendliness meditation. I will talk a little bit more about that in a second. Another way of doing it, which is very closely related, is to have a sense of gratitude and thankfulness. I'll talk a bit about that. Another way of doing it is to think about something you have done in your life that you feel really good about. We've all done things in our life that we feel kind of joyous about in the past. We were kind to somebody by the way we acted towards them. Maybe we were generous in a certain way. And sometimes all you have to do is kind of bring back that moment from the past, bring it into the present, and we can re-experience some of the joy that was conjoined with that act of kindness in the past. And that is also very useful in the sense that if you see the power of that kindness in bringing about joy, it encourages you to do more of the same in the future and then bring it back into the meditation again in the future. And this way, these things kind of build up together and they become a powerful kind of spiritual force in your life. So, first of all, let me just kind of recap a little bit on the idea of metta meditation, of loving-kindness. This word, metta, is the same word as you find in, pretty much very similar word as you find in Kalyana Mitta. I know this is KM group, is that right? Something like that. If this is the KM group, then I'm on the right track. If not, then I'm in trouble. But if it is the KM group, then Mitta, Kalyana Mitta, is related to metta. And mitta is like a friend, yeah? So metta is like friendliness. So it is like seeing, having a friendly attitude to people around you. And friendliness, and metta in particular, what it refers to is the ability to see the good qualities in other people. Yeah, when you see the good qualities and you forgive whatever bad might be there, then you develop this beautiful friendly feeling towards somebody because you see what is positive. And that gives you a large kind of idea already of what this meditation is about and how to develop it. It is really about focusing on these good qualities, the good spiritual qualities, yeah, the generosity, the kindness, the selflessness, the compassion, the peace, or whatever you see in others, and develop that perception inside of yourself, and then kind of project it out towards all of everywhere, to all four directions, if you wish. So we'll try that in a second, how we do this. But to give you some kind of framework, perhaps, for doing this, there's different ways of doing it. But one of the ways of doing this is to come back to this idea of gratitude that I mentioned just a moment ago. Because when you have gratitude to someone, you also have almost, as part of that, is that the aspect of metta comes pretty much at the same time. Because when you have gratitude towards somebody, you feel friendly towards them. You feel, you know, you see the good qualities in them. These things kind of come together in a sense. So how can we do this in a practical way? And one of the ways of doing that is when you are here at this Jhana Grove Center, is to remember how this place came about. Yeah, the kind of forces that kind of made this place possible. And of course, right now there are people in the Buddhist Society of WA who work lots of hours, every week to kind of make this place work. Lots of people who have almost like permanent positions, being caretakers, being, having all kind of roles to run this place together. And this place really only runs and only works because of these people who volunteer their energy, sometimes their money, sometimes so many of their assets that they actually use to kind of make these things work, make a place like this work out. And what a wonderful thing it is that we live in the world where people have this willingness to kind of share, to have a charitable ideas of some larger vision of what is good for the world. So just being in a place like this, this place is full of charity. Yeah, so much of what is done here is charity. Even the builder who built this place, he didn't have any profit on building Jhana Grove. That was kind of his generosity towards the center. And in a large center like this, that's a lot of money that he gave up to be able to build this place. So much kindness that goes into this place all the time. Then there is, so this is one kind of wonderful thing to think of, all the people who help it work in a general sense, but also, of course, people like Ajahn Brahm, who was kind of the visionary behind Jhana Grove Center, and who spends large amounts of time to sort this out. In a sense, a life like Ajahn Brahm's is very interesting to focus on, because Ajahn Brahm's life is basically a life of charity. That's what he lives for. Ajahn Brahm could very easily have gone off to a cave somewhere. There are some beautiful caves around the world in Buddhist countries like Sri Lanka and Thailand where you can just disappear and have to talk to anyone. That's probably what Ajahn Brahm would have liked if he could just disappear, because he is an extraordinarily good meditator. So he just withdraws and he just kind of goes into a very blissful state, and he remains there for 40 years. Yeah, something like that. No, maybe not continuously, but you know what I mean, in a general sense. And then this is kind of the best way for a really skilled meditator to abide. So you give up a lot when you are a person of Ajahn Brahm's kind of caliber when it comes to meditation practice. And he does that because he knows that when you teach these things, it just gives so much joy also to other people. It's really just an act of compassion. It's a wonderful example of the world. So a sense of gratitude also for all the people who have worked here at Jhana Grove. And because many of you know Ajahn Brahm, then he's kind of is an obvious focus for that. But even more, even larger than that, is a sense of maybe gratitude for the Buddha himself. One of the kind of the extraordinary aspects of the Buddha's life, after his awakening at the age of 35, he decided, well, what should I do now? Should I just kind of hang out and enjoy myself, or should I do something for other beings? And he knew that if he's going to do something for other beings, it's going to be much more work. Yeah, much more. He can't really enjoy his meditation so much. So he decided, okay, I'm going to do this for humanity and also for other beings as well. So the Buddha's last 45 years of his life is just really an expression of generosity, of giving. And all history of Buddhism is a consequence of that giving of the Buddha in those 45 years. Again, the Buddha had no vested interest in teaching anybody. For him, there was nothing to be gained. There was no kind of, he wasn't really interested in being praised or being or whatever. So he did it only out of compassion. That was the only reason why he gave these teachings. That's kind of powerful. 45 years spent solely in the service of humanity, in the service of all beings. There's something really astonishing about that. I always like to reflect on the life of the Buddha, because if you understand the Buddha as an ordinary human being, which he was, it's easy, you can actually relate to the Buddha a little bit. And one of the things which I find very interesting about the Buddha is that when he set out teaching 2,500 years ago, one of the things he realized very early on was that these teachings, they will carry on in human society for a long, long time in the future. They will go from generation to generation, from culture to culture. So he talked about setting in motion the wheel of the Dhamma. And this idea of the wheel of the Dhamma is like you teach something, you set something going, and once it starts going, it carries on. It carries on through its own force, through its own power, because it is so attractive. And it moves precisely from generation to generation and culture to culture. So he knew that this was going to last for a long time. And because of that, he framed and he spoke his discourses in such a way that they have a very universal appeal. So when we read the discourse of the Buddha in the present day, they're not that hard to understand. Yeah? Why? Well, precisely because they were given in such a way so as for everyone to be able to understand. These are universal aspects of beings, universal psychological aspect of what it means to be human. They are the same across time and across cultures. And because of that, these teachings are still relevant today. But the meaning of that, what is really powerful about that, is that when the Buddha gave these teachings 2,500 years ago, he was thinking about us. Yeah, he was thinking about all future generations in all future cultures. And that's kind of extraordinary. So when you hear the teachings of the Buddha, he is not some kind of ancient teacher that lived a long time ago. He's very much present because he was speaking to everybody. If you are a human being, if you are any kind of being, he's talking to you. So his act of generosity has a direct bearing on us right here today, because in many ways the Buddha actually is your ultimate teacher when it comes to these Buddhist teachings. So try, if you can, to bring up the idea of generosity in this way. If you find it hard to relate to the Buddha, okay, I can sort of understand that because it takes a while to kind of get into this mindset. But think instead about people in the present day, in this life, who have done something wonderful and marvelous. Yeah, think, even if you can, this is difficult for many people, but even your parents, yeah, if you reflect about your parents in the right way. Obviously, it depends on what kind of parents we had, but for most people, our parents had done an enormous amount of sacrifice on our behalf. And just thinking about that can already be a very positive and good thing. Anyone else in your life who you feel have contributed to your existence, who have given you good advice, who has been there when you needed them, who has kind of been an emotional support or whatever it is, all of these people we have grounds to have gratitude for. And when you build up this emotion of feeling of gratitude, loving kindness, metta, all of these things come along as par for the course. It's very, very useful feeling to have, or emotion or idea to build up. One more thing that I would recommend you to do as well for this metta thing to work, and that is to forgive anyone in your life who you may feel difficult, who you may have maybe some upset with or anger with or whatever it is. One of the things about the Buddhist path, which is fairly obvious, we can't really afford to be angry with anyone, because that anger destroys really the spiritual development. So as soon as, if there's anyone in your life you feel is difficult, really, ideally, we should try to forgive those. Yeah. So how can we do that? How can we forgive people in the world? How can we let go of the anger? This is such an important part of the spiritual practice. And in a world which is so divided as it is now, it's even more important to be able to do this act of forgiveness. And there's two very basic and simple ways of being able to forgive others. And the first one is to remember that people are complex. People have many sides to them. And sometimes you get angry with people. Sometimes you get angry with really good people. You know what it's like. You get deluded for a while. You get angry with the really good ones. So what you have to do is to remember that people have many sides to them. Yeah. And when you see that people overall are good, people who have a spiritual practice, people who at the very least they try to do their very best, they want to keep the precepts, they want to be kind and generous and helpful in this world, people have that as an underlying attitude. Yeah, what a wonderful thing it is to be around people like that. And when you remember that underlying thing, that big picture of what so many of these people are like, then the little problems, the little things that upset you, you can leave them to one side and you can focus on the big picture instead. So remember, people, when they upset you, try to see if there are some good sides you are forgetting about. Build up those good sides. Rejoice in the goodness in other people. And then that enables you gradually to also to let go of the negative sides. That is the kind of the, in many ways, the most powerful way. Another way of dealing with upset. Sometimes there may be people you find it very hard to see good qualities in. Yeah, you kind of have this very negative picture of somebody. And if that is the case, then you have to learn to have compassion for people instead. Yeah, and the idea behind this is that the majority of people in the world, well, we all have our blindnesses, but the more bad things you do, the more negative qualities you have as a person, the more deluded and the more blind you are. And the reason for that is because doing bad things, well, everybody wants to be happy, but if you do lots of bad things, where does that lead you? It leads you to unhappiness. Yeah, I think it's kind of almost intuitive. You know that that is true. If you do bad things towards other people, you tend to feel bad about yourself for the short term, but also in the medium term. And from a Buddhist point of view, even in the very long term, you tend to feel bad about yourself if you treat other people badly. So when you see someone, you find it really hard to forgive and to have kindness towards someone you may be a bit upset about, precisely because they have many bad qualities. Remember, they are the ones who have the problem, not really you. They are the ones who carry with them all of these negative qualities. And as they do so, even though they want to be happy, everybody in this world wants to be happy. Nobody wants to be sad and miserable. Even though they want to be happy, they are actually carrying out the conditions and causes for their own suffering in the present, in the future, and whenever it is. And once you think like that, instead of being upset with them because they may have hurt you, instead of being angry because they have, you know, you have to kind of bear the brunt of their bad actions or whatever it is, instead of that, it's like you turn the table around. You remember they are the main victim of their own suffering. Yeah, and then you kind of think differently. They are deluded. They're walking in the dark. And when you are deluded and walking in the dark, you have no idea what you're doing. Then you end up causing so much suffering for yourself, suffering for others as well, but most of all, suffering for yourself. And in this way, you can have compassion for people who are even difficult. So this is like the foundation for the idea of metta. Giving up, first of all the negative aspects, the way we look at other people, realizing you can't really afford to have enemies or to be angry with people in this world. Give up the anger, have compassionate understanding instead, and then build up the idea of good qualities, have a sense of gratitude, and then the basis for having metta is kind of put in place. Okay, so that's just a little bit of introduction for you. So let's see if we can put this into practice and see how it works out. Okay, so as usual, please just start out every meditation in roughly the same way. Close your eyes, feel the body, make sure you're nice and comfortable. And if you have to, please change your posture. And then just take time at the beginning, just feeling the body, making sure you are at ease, that you are relaxed. And it's almost as if you want to come to a point where you feel like you can sit here forever because you're so comfortable. You feel so nice just sitting there on your little mat, on your little cushion. And please just enjoy the peace, enjoy the tranquility, enjoy the good company, enjoy this marvelous place called Jhana Grove. And as you take part and as you stay here at this spiritual sanctuary in Perth, just feel how fortunate and how lucky you are to be part of this. There's a sense of security here, a sense of kindness and care. And what a wonderful thing that is, together with these beautiful facilities. So build up this positive feeling in your mind. And as you do that, it allows you to relax even more and to just enjoy sitting here, not doing anything at all except being peaceful. And if you do find it is hard to be peaceful, and remind yourself that it is the spiritual practice or spiritual qualities that give meaning to anything in life. Everything is founded on the spiritual qualities. So instead of thinking about all the secondary things, come back to this primary thing, this one thing which kind of is the foundation and the root of everything else. And now, if you like, to spend a few moments on reflecting on the spiritual qualities that we are trying to develop on this path, the kindness, the generosity, the charity, the compassion, the peace, and all of these qualities. Just reflect on them for a while and try to understand what they mean and what they feel like and what they, how they exist in human beings. And once you have an idea of what some of these qualities mean, maybe by remembering instances from the past when you had these qualities powerfully in your mind and your heart, once you feel that, remind yourself that there are lots of people in this world who have these qualities, some who have built them up to a very powerful extent. So now imagine yourself envisage, if you like, the northern direction from here. It doesn't matter where it is, just an imagination. Imagine the north, and imagine all the people, all the beings out there who have these spiritual qualities. And what a wonderful thing it is to be able to share the world with beings, with people like that. May all those people to the north, may you be well and happy. And if you wish, bring your attention around to the eastern direction and reestablish, if you want, that perception of all the good qualities in beings that exist in this world. And what a wonderful thing it is to be able to share the world with beings that have so many good qualities. Thank you, all those beings in the eastern direction. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your light with this world. And now, if you like, bring your attention around to the southern direction. And again, re-establish this idea of all these wonderful spiritual qualities that exist in people's and beings' hearts. And if it works for you, you can also add all the devas, all the invisible beings, who often are invisible precisely because they have developed these qualities to such a wonderful and high extent. So even take those into your meditation practice. Thank you, all those beings in the southern direction, visible and invisible, for being part of this world and for making this world a better place. And now, if you like, bring your attention around to the western direction. And if you wish, you can bring into your perception all the monks and all the nuns everywhere who also practice this path and who practice it full time. And if it works for you, you can think how wonderful it is that there are people who practice the spiritual life full time, always trying to do what is right and to live well. So all those people, all those beings in the Western direction, thank you for being there, for being part of this world, for making it a better place. And now, if you like, bring up the perception of the planet Earth in your mind's eye. And you see this beautiful planet of green, blue, white, and a little bit of brown. And imagine a beam of golden light coming out of your heart, enveloping the entire Earth, enveloping it with kindness, with care and compassion, and wishing all the beings, visible, invisible, and invisible, may you all be well and happy. And now we are coming close to the end of the meditation. And before we come to the end, just come back to your breath for a few moments. And now ask yourself, how do you feel now? If you feel more at ease, more relaxed, if your mental state has improved in any kind of way, ask yourself again why that is. What are the things that you have developed? How have things changed? What is the cause for these things to be developed in a certain way? I will now ring the bell 3 times, and on the 3rd time of the ringing, please come out of your meditation. Okay, that's it for now. So we'll see you back again at 8 o'clock this evening.